And welcome back to another special episode of the Epic Experiment Podcast. I'm your host, Bruce, and I'm joined on the line once again this week by Lux. Lux, what's new, my friend?
And nothing really, and I'm just surprised at how quickly my LGS sold out of Commander Legends packs.
Well, that is good for your store, so that's good for them. But are you really surprised? Like, think of the world. Like, can people play competitive Magic? No. What can they all play? They can play EDH over webcam. And as a result, I'm not surprised Commander Legends got snapped up. Like, it is hot. It's cool stuff. So, go for it. Yeah, what do you want?
I was just saying, I really wish that I had been able to snag me some.
Me too, my friend. Me too. The problem of living so far away from an LGS is that it's sometimes hard to get your stuff. And so you're like, I want some Commander Legends goodies. Like, there's some super good cards. Now, but I will have to say, the good news about all of this is that Commander Legends, like the regular draft packs, are supposed to be like a reasonably like good supply for, like, it's not going to be like a real master set if you're buying the draft boosters. So it should hang around for a while, which is good news. So long as you're not looking for like the foiled etch art stuff and the collector's booster goodies. But if you just want like the regular cards to play with, like, that's good news. Like, there's going to be lots of it around. So hopefully stores get resupplied soon and we can get our hands on some cool stuff, right?
Yep.
Indeed. Otherwise, how is stuff in the grand state of Texas these days?
And nothing new, really.
No, just trying to get by and survive in a world that doesn't seem to want to let us all do what we want to do.
Yeah, pretty much.
COVID. Oh, presidential elections. Oh, winter. We had snow last night. And, like, not like a little bit. Like, we had lots. And we woke up this morning and it was like, oh, look at that. The world is all snowed in. So, thus begins the never-ending winter of Canada.
And I know not of the snow you speak of.
Yeah, let me assure you. It's fine most of the time, but, like, at the start of the season, at the end of the season, it's, like, wet and sloppy and not fun. Yeah, we had wet, sloppy snow to deal with last night and, like, this morning. So I was out shoveling with my son, and it's, like, just slop. It's, like, it's wet and heavy and not fun. So it's kind of like trying to shovel a puddle. It's not a lot of fun. Not a lot of fun. Anyway, hopefully the weather's supposed to warm up a little bit this week. Maybe it'll all melt before the end of the month so that, you know, we can maybe go roll into December without having snow, which, like, realistically, I'm going to be honest, coming out as a Canadian, I know it sounds like heresy because snow pretty much runs in my blood. I don't really like the snow to come any earlier than it has to. Because regardless, and I tell my students this in school too, regardless of what time the snow arrives at, it always melts in like second week of April is when the snow is finally like more or less all gone. You'll still find a few big snowbanks, so like at the back of a shopping mall's like parking lot or stuff like that, but like most of the snow is gone the second week of April, regardless of what the weather does. So if snow comes early, winter just shows up early. And that means like winter's an extra 2, 3, 4 weeks if, you know, if it doesn't show up, you know, if it shows up early. So it's kind of a big old bag of suck. So don't love it, particularly not now. I always tell my kids at school, my children here at home, like, let's wait till like, let's keep the snow for December the 1st. And then it can snow, right? It can do whatever it needs to do. But let's not have it any earlier than December the 1st. All right. So some housekeeping stuff here. So first off, big thank you to the people at the Lotus Council. The Lotus Council has been a big, big supporter of us here at the podcast. And they are our home at thelotuscouncil.com. So please, by all means, go and check them out. They've got videos, like, so for instance, Sona opened some stuff today. They've got I know WoW was streaming over the weekend. They've got a little bit of everything for everybody. They hopefully people are, you know, keen to see what they put out. So a great place to check out. Also, they've got a really cool Discord with lots of cool things going on. So if you want to talk Magic, you want to talk EDH, come and check out thelowestcouncil.com and check out their Discord. You will not regret it. Lux and I both enjoy hanging out there immensely. So please stop in, have a chance to visit, and say hi. We'll be happy to talk to you. Also, thank you. Our thanks goes out to the people organizing the third annual 31 Days of Christmas again this year. Just a reminder, we are also on board. We are building a community-based built EDH deck following our own guidelines for the show here on the show using Twitter polls. So if you're not following on us and you're interested in seeing what goes in the deck, please check us, follow us on Twitter at the Epic EXP Cast. You can see what's going to go in that deck and have a say. So Zarastan is our commander, and we'll be giving it away later in December as part of that giveaway, where there are literally a giveaway every single day for the entire month of December. So please, if you want to get your name in, there's a link in the show notes down below at the bottom, wherever, whatever platform you're looking, reading this or listening to, go down there, find the link, and sign up. You're not going to be sorry. Lots of good stuff given away, lots of big sponsors. I saw Wizards of the Coast got back on board, so there's lots of good stuff going on there too. So, 31 Days of Christmas, do not miss it. All right. And then our episode 40 giveaway. We have two winners, Lux. Two. I know. So, like, we hit 30 and we had nobody won a Brea. We hit 40 and now we have two people. Like, we have two winners. It's great. So, like I said, we sort of become our thing where every 10 episodes we stop, we say thank you, and we give away a little something to people who've been listening. So, we're going to be giving away a Brea Ethereum Shaper, and we're going to be giving away a pack of Commander Legends. So this time our winners are Ryan and Chris. So Ryan will be winning the pack of Commander Legends. Chris will be winning the pack of the Brea. I'll be reaching out to you on Twitter to get coordinates so I can mail you your stuff. All right, folks. So thank you to everybody who signed up, got their names in the draw, and won themselves some stuff. So, you know, this is episode 42, so it won't be too long before we're doing it yet again for some more stuff. So hang in there, folks. We'll be doing another giveaway soon enough. All right. Are you ready, Lux? Let's get down to business.
Yep.
Okay. So segment one, we got garbage or great. We got a wee little guy today. We got an experiment one. So one green mana for a creature human ooze. It's a 1/1, has evolve. And it says, so evolve, the text says, whenever a creature enters a battlefield under your control, if that creature has greater power or toughness than this creature, put a +1/+1 counter on this creature. And then remove 2 +1/+1 counters from experiment one, regenerate experiment one. So what do you think there, Lux?
I honestly think it's great.
Yeah, like, I'm a big fan, but I want to hear why. Like, talk us through. Why do you think this card is great? Because maybe my reasoning is very different.
Well, and for me, like, it really, you know, plays into the and they hold the +1/+1 counters in a strategy, and they gets really good for that strategy, and you get it for cheap.
It is true. And one thing I like about it is that the way to put a counter on is very, very simple, right? You don't have to do a whole lot to make this be a 3/3 or a 4/4. Really, like, it's really not that hard. And the fact that it can allow itself to regenerate is kind of a real handy trick, because how do +1/+1 counter decks usually fold? Like, think about it. Think about an Abzan or a Selesnya creature deck premised on +1/+1 counter synergies. How does it die?
And normally, they removal and stuff.
Well, yeah, a board wipe, right? A board wipe totally sets you back, and you go, oh, geez, I'm skunked now. Well, this little guy goes, and in many situations, not all forms of removal, but many of them, it can, if it's got a couple of counters on it, it can stick around. So it's kind of a sticky little card. You know, it doesn't take much to trigger it back up again. And next thing you know, you got a 2-2, a 3-3, a 4-4, whatever, that can do a little bit of work. So I'm a big fan of it. I think it's a tasty little inclusion. I also like the price tag. The price tag is like, it was from Gatecrash, but it's got been a couple of reprints, but none of the reprints are over a dollar. Like the Gatecrash version is 50 cents, which, you know what, if you're putting that in your commander deck, particularly like even ours, like if you're putting $100 commander decks, you get this, like this little guy here, 50 cents, like that's pretty good. You're like, all right, that's a pretty good inclusion. It can carry it can carry some good weight. You know, it's just a good little card. It's not a great top deck in the late stages of the game, but you know, in most stages of the game, you're probably pretty happy to pull this, slap it on the table, and then start putting some counters on it one after another. So anyway, I like it. So I'm a big fan. I think it's great. I think we're on board. I think we're both in the same come to agreement there. What do you think, Lux?
Yeah, I agree with what you said.
Perfect. All right. Favorite one is great. Lux. So today we thought we might talk about some different ways to spruce up your deck if you're playing as a budget player. So the most obvious way that people go about setting up to personalize their deck or make their deck look particularly unique is to do things like foil out their decks or get some alters done with their cards. Like these are things we've heard, right? So if you're a budget player like us, you know, your decks are $100. Like almost everything we've brewed for the entire duration of this show, and including tonight's deck that we're going to share with you guys, we keep our costs down. All right, that's our whole premise. We don't want you guys to go out there and think you need to spend a lot of money to have fun playing Commander, and you don't. You do a lot of it for cheap. However, you still want to personalize your deck, and I understand that because I'm sort of in the same boat too. I'd like to, you know, make my deck kind of unique. So one of the things you can do that's pretty easy is you can go and find some common basics, basic lands that are, you know, all look the same. So a couple of easy ways. So a lot of like booster bundle, like bundles have like a bundle of lands that are foil lands. So foil basics is one way you can do it. You can spruce things up. But another one I really like is using full art basics as a way to sort of provide a little bit of extra character to your battlefield, right? So you, when you're looking down at your cards, you go, yeah, geez, look at those cool lands. I like those. And so tonight I want to share with you some of the lands that I like. For each of the five land types. Maybe Lux, you have something that you like to share with the audience too. But yeah, these are full art basics that, and there's been a lot of them that have been printed the last sort of 3, 4, 5 years, pretty much ever since Battle for Zendikar came back. Full art lands has sort of been something on the menu for everybody. And so, you know, we'll share some of the ones that we kind of like as being our, things that you might really want to spruce up your deck. Also, there's an added benefit for anybody who hasn't thought about it. If you're playing webcam EDH, the full art basics are a really great way to just make it really obvious what land you're playing, because they're just more visible than like a regular basic that's just got you sort of the picture in the top half of the box, and then you've got the text box that just tells you what it does. So, all right. So let's start with some planes there with for Lux. All right. So I've got my planes, and what we're going to do, we'll share all these links so if anybody who's in the show notes wants to follow along. My planes is not truly a planes. It's a snow-covered planes from Modern Horizons. So it is number 250 out of 254, and it is the snow-covered planes that is stunning. What I like best with this one, and it sort of adds some extra character to it, is the blue that figures through the lower third of the box, the art. And I, you know, really, it really is striking when you have the sun in the background too, in the top sort of right hand corner of the picture, and then you get the dark blue of the ice. And as somebody who lives in Canada and we see lots of ice, like I can relate to this. I mean, it feels right to have this sort of art appear on a snow covered plane. So I think that's, you know, really striking. So it's done by Titus Lunter. And you know, it's not, you know, as cheap as it probably could be, because out of Modern Horizons, it's like 30 cents a card. And if you need, you know, if you need 10 of them or 15 of them, well, now you're talking, you know, a couple of dollars worth of lands, but, you know, it adds a nice, some nice personality to your deck and is, kind of nice. So, but yeah, so that's my planes. Fox, did you have a planes that you happen to like too?
And I'm at, and I actually have the card in my hand right now.
What set is it from?
And it's from Battle for Zendikar. The card number is 251.
Okay, well, we'll go have a look for BFZ land 2. What is it? 2?
251.
251. I need to sort better than that. All right, let's. 251. Let's have a look. Let's have a look. Oh wow, that's a nice one too. I haven't seen that. I've forgotten that one was reprinted. So, what do you like about this particular one there, Lex?
And mainly, and I like in how the and landscape looks, and when they, it's kind of like a mystical, you know, and kind of looks like they're floating, doesn't it?
Well, yes, that's kind of the floating hedron effect of Zendikar, which is kind of, I kind of like how like it's still a plains, it's very obviously a plains, but you get the sort of the texture of, you know, the vines draping off the hedrons that are these floating, you know, portions of land on all around our plains. So I kind of it definitely is very striking, and I like what the part is best. I think is the in the background, you get the other, you can see the rest of the, I guess, the continents or whatever, the these portions of land that are floating off in the distance. It just gives you a really cool image of Zendikar as a place. Like, it's really hard for me to imagine land masses floating through the sky, but this gives us a really good impression for what that might look like, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
It is, that is, that is a stunning piece of art. I like that one too. That was done by Sam Burley. So we'll include that link in the show notes too. So if anybody wants those, check them on out. All right, moving on to islands, and I think this one for me is very easy. This is from Zendikar Rising. This is the island 271. This is the whirlpool that came out from. This year's set, and done by, I guess the artist is Tianhua X. And to me, that's that whirlpool is stunning. And I think that looks so sharp. And I can't wait to get a couple of these in foil too, because I think that would just look beautiful in foil. So yeah, you know, I like this island. I think this one does. I've got a couple in the EDH Boxing League deck that I'm playing, and they are by far and away my favorite island I've ever opened. And I, you know, can't wait to get a whole bunch more of them. So they're 35 cents a card. So again, cost you a couple of dollars in land to pick up a, you know, 10 or 15 of them. But I think it's money well spent, and you're going to find that you've got some really sharp islands there that are, you know, you're not going to be sad about seeing those when you draw those off the top of your deck. What about you, Lux? What did you find?
And hold on, like, I'm gonna pull the picture up that way you can see it.
Oh, sounds good. I like the look of that. Yeah. So yeah, this is just a real easy way to spruce up your deck, there, audience. And if you're, you know, a lot of people don't care, right? There's a lot of people who'd rather spend their time and energy getting other cards, but I'm a big fan. If you're playing Commander on a semi-regular basis, it's worth your while to find something that is that you that appeals to you, right? So adds a little bit of personal flair to your deck. Yeah, so right. That is 258, is that right?
Yep.
Alright, so we're gonna go find Island from BFZ 258. And alright. This one is pretty good too. So tell us about this one. Which one is it? What do you like about this one?
And mainly because, and then just look at it, a bunch of floating cup islands.
Yeah, I think this is sort of taking the name Cup Islands. A number of people, when I was asking people about a favorite island, this is sort of their go-to that they like. Now, they did get another version of this in Zendikar Rising, which is not quite the same. Let's see if I can find the picture for that one. But again, it's similar. But again, I do think this one is the better art for it. With the Cup Islands dumping water back into the sea. I think what I like about it is the fact that, you know, it looks like a stormy day. Like it looks like the sea. And it looks like a rough and stormy sea that I kinda like that one. It kind of captures, I think, the essence of Zendikar really nicely, doesn't it?
Yeah, and it honestly does.
Yeah, and so we're talking, so this one is, what, 25 cents again? So reasonably cheap. It might be a little bit harder to track down because it's from 2015. But if you have friends who have got, you know, lands they've chucked in a box or whatever, maybe you can, you know, trade for some of these, or maybe they'll just give them to you because they don't want them. These are really sharp. And again, these look really good in foil too. So I like this one too. It's a good selection for sure. All right. My mountain is from Zendikar Rising as well. It is Mountain 277. And I don't know, it's hard for me to describe this one to you guys, apart from I think what strikes me is the perspective. Where you're standing down, looking up at the sky, and you're seeing all this rough and rugged land masses that don't really look like mountains, but look like spires of rock, and you get plenty of red that is coloring the rocks on the underside here. So fantastic! I like this one for whatever reason. I usually don't like mountains. There's not very few mountains I've actually ever said I like this, and this one I do like. So I'm having to try and pick up a few more of these too as I go around my business. These are stunning, and I do very much like them. So, yeah, that's my mountain. I think it's fantastic. Please check the link out so you too can figure it out. What about you there, Lux? What are you digging for mountains?
And this is basically one that I've talked about before. It's another one from Battle for Zendikar.
What? Do you have a card number?
And let me see what the card number is. It's one that you might be familiar with.
I probably am, but...
244.
Mountain 244 from Battle for Zendikar. Let's have a look. I want the... That's not decidedly that's helpful. All right, let's try this again. Mountain 244.
Right, and is it not showing up?
I'm having a hard time getting the link for it, so give me a second. But let's go to Battle for Zendikar, and we want sort by land.
It's the Ring Mountain.
Yeah, I think I know the one you're talking about. But I want type. I want land. And then we're searching.
Hold on, never mind. I messed up on the number. And one I was looking at was from regular Zendikar.
Oh, okay.
And the Battle for Zendikar one is 267.
Okay, so let's go find sets. Have a look. It's not helping me much. All right, let's try that again. 267, you said?
Yep.
267. I'm sorry, folks. There it is. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, that's a good one. I like that one. Yes. So, yes, you definitely see the remnants of a ring that it looks like it's in the process of falling apart, doesn't it?
It honestly does.
That is very cool. I like that one. That's a very fun and would look really good in foil with that the coloration there from the sun that's sort of shining through the ring as it's falling down. It's just really interesting piece of artwork there. I like that one for sure. No, excellent. Big fan. All right. For forests, I'm going to come down to this. I have Forest 381 from Double Masters. It's a John Avon, and it is just stunning. To me, that's what a forest ought to look like. There's lots of other really good forests out there, but this one is stunning. It is definitely not cheap. It is a dollar a card, so you're spending quite a bit of money if you only have a $100 deck on some basics. But again, if you've got your deck and you're looking to spruce it up a bit, a couple of these would go a long way. So just really, really stunning. Lots of rich green throughout the trees. And so, yeah, I think this card is beautiful, and I think the art is stunning. It should come as no surprise because John Avon's name is synonymous with terrific landscapes for our art card, for our land cards. So, yeah, Forest 381 is where I am at. What about you, Lux? What do you dig for as far as a forest? And you should be like a connoisseur of forests.
Well, and I'm honestly looking at all of them, and like the best example for a forest and from my collection would this is also a John Avon card. It's a 216 and from Unstable.
Oh, Unstable, yeah. Okay. So let's go see. There it is. And I'll put this. Oh, wow. Yeah. That's a beautiful. That is stunning, too. And it's John Avon at it again. And you can sort of tell because I think some of the same stylistic elements are there. And again, the rich, deep green that comes through. So, yeah. Like, he might have just taken two images from the same forest and made consecutive forest art cards, right?
Yeah.
Beautiful. No, I'm a big fan of this for sure. So yeah, Unstable or the Double Masters version, you can't go wrong. These are not cheap, if I'm not mistaken. They're $270 a card for the non-foil version. So you're spending plenty on them. But I think there's money well spent if you're gonna keep the deck for quite a while, right?
Yep.
And then for swamps, so my swamp of choice is the swamp from Our Devastation with the Bolas horns in the background. So this is 187 from Our Devastation, done by Clint Keary. So this one is stunning, and the Amalyn Cat ones are in my probably top couple of land cards for all these, but when it comes down to it, the swamp with the horns in the background on the plane of Amalyn Cat, this feels like a swamp. This feels like an ominous place to be because of the colors, but also those horns and the sensation that Nicol Bolas is not far away. And so I think this one is really something else. And so this is by far and away my favorite swamp. I don't own too many of these, and I wish I did. They're not too expensive, I think. They're about 50 cents a card, but super cool, and I love this one a lot. All right, what about you, Lux? Where are you at with swamps? Lux? You digging for one?
No. And you kind of cut out for me, but what I was going to say is you picked the same one I was looking at.
Oh, we picked the same one. That's fair. This one is like this one is really quite ominous. Now, I will say there are some other great swamps that are out there. So,
yeah, what I was going to say though is that what makes our devastation one more and menacing and ominous is the fact that like there's blood littering the ground.
Yeah, no, there's no doubt about it. But I know it doesn't always appeal to everybody. But no, it's definitely one of the better ones. Other people are going to say they like the Godzilla swamp with the Godzilla in the background. Others are going to say they like the one with, I believe it's Phyrexian Negator in the background. There's lots of great ones out there. Some people really just dig the swamp from the swamp from the Theros with the big skull on the background to Nyx. So there's lots of great swamps out there that, you know, I wish they did more full arts. The nice part is we're getting more and more of them all the time. But yeah, so there's a lot of really cool swamps. That one from Power of Devastation is particularly stunning in my mind. So, all right. So there are some easy ways, folks, you can spruce up your deck, your use of personality, and it won't cost you an arm and a leg. So please, please, please check out those links. And if you have a different choice that you like, let us know. We'd love to hear about what other cool lands are out there. Because you know what? We haven't seen them all. There's so many that are out there in the history of this game that are cool. Let us know. Some people like old borders. Some people like white borders. Some people like, all sorts of things. So let us know. You can find us on Twitter, of course. You can send us an email with some of the art you like. We'd love to hear it. All right. Got some commanders. We got 8 to go through tonight there, Lux. Are you ready?
Yep.
All right, let's lock and load. All right, we got a Chroma, Vision of Ixidor. So 5 white, legendary creature, angel, 6/6, flying, first strike, vigilance, trample. At the beginning of each combat until the end of turn, each other creature you control gets +1/+1 if it has flying, +1/+1 if it has first strike, and so on for double strike, death touch, haste, hexproof, indestructible, lifelink, menace, protection, reach, trample, vigilance, and partner. And, of course, a Chroma has partner. So, what do you think of this one? Like this one's like it's a mythic, so it's like a gigantic 6/6 flying angel. Like, are you excited to play this card?
And honestly, with that price, and she'd be better than the 99.
You know what? Yeah, but she's a huge pump on a stick. So I would be prepared to, entertain her, particularly for a partner. You partner her up with something significantly cheaper. And so now you're not just pigeonholed in mono white. But now you can play your commander. You have access to a commander earlier in the game. So you're not stuck on solely trying to get to 7 mana to get this monstrosity into play. But if you can have her stick, oh, wow. I think the sky's the limit with this one. So I'm a big fan of Akroma. I think she is terrific. Obviously, she's not going to be piloting any, competitive EDH games. But if you're playing, budget jank, this could be spicy. Absolutely spicy. Whew. I like it. I'm a big fan. Like this and like Odric and you partner with something red, you play Avacyn, and then you're like you can flash in Avacyn to protect her so she doesn't die, because like you want to protect your 7 mana commander. But yeah, no, I like this. I would jump through some hoops in order to try and make Akroma work for sure. Any last thoughts? We're gonna move on to the next one.
Yeah, let's move on.
All right, so we got Amareth the Lustrous. Can you read Amareth for us?
Yeah, for 3, a green, a white, and a blue, you get a legendary creature dragon 6/6 with flying. And whenever another permanent enters the battlefield under your control, look at the top card of your library. If it shares a card type with that permanent, you may reveal that card and put it in your hand.
So, another awesome dragon. Like, this is, like, there's a lot of these sort of three-color dragons floating around that you can use as your commander in all sorts of situations, whether it's, you know, arcades, or you get Evictus Asmati, or you go and get something else like, oh, I forgot even what they're all called, but there's so many of these three-color dragons. This one is, you know, again, another good option for you to play. Now, how relevant do you think that trigger is whenever another permanent enters the battlefield under control? Another permanent, not a creature, a permanent. So you play a land and you get a trigger. So how good do you think that is?
Like, it'd be really good for getting lands out.
Yeah, I guess if you have back-to-back lands, you play a land, you reveal, and you look, and you reveal a land, and you put it right in your hand. So you're not wrong there. I also think something like Arcane Adaptation or things that change creature types or things that have maybe changelings or things like that also play really nicely with Amareth to make you be able to draw a whole lot. So here's a question. So is this, like, you put this in your dragon deck, like your five-color, you know, Ur-Dragon or Rammos, the Dragon Engine deck, or are you playing Amareth as his own thing?
And honestly, you could probably do both with him.
Yeah, no, you could do both, and I think the Bant version of Amareth looks a lot different than just stuffing it in the Ur-Dragon deck. Like, if you put it in Ur-Dragon, you're just playing it for dragon's sake, and you're going to get dragons off of it. But if you're going to go and get, going to play this as your commander, this would look very, very different. Very cool, don't get me wrong, but very, very different. So I'm a big fan of this one. I like it. It makes it sort of an interesting puzzle about how you build it and where you, whether it goes in the 99 or as a lead singer. And I think they both are very different. So I'm a big believer in this one. I think also it's going to do a lot of damage. Look. Like, this has got a card advantage engine on it. It's going to, like, be a real problem, isn't it?
I can honestly see it becoming one.
Yeah. Like, okay, I know it's not Chulain. Like, Chulain is another problem all in its own sort. But, like the problem with these cards is that, particularly in Bant, is that you get these value engines stapled to the creature, and you can do a lot of damage. You can just cause a lot of mayhem, and, like, because you can outdraw and out-resource your opponents far more rapidly than in most other color combinations. You got to make the mana work, but once you can do that, Chulain and Amareth are two peas in the same pod, more or less. All right, next we have Inara, Wolven Familiar. Let's see. 3 and a green for a 4/4. Legendary creature, Wolf Beast. It's an uncommon, so it's going to be a little bit different on the power level than some of the other ones we've seen right now. So we've seen a mythic, we've seen a rare, and this is going to be an uncommon. As long as it's your turn, commanders you control have indestructible. Okay. So, what's stopping you from putting Inara in with Akroma, for instance? Like, it's got partner, so it can partner up with Akroma. You've got that's exactly what you want Akroma to do, is to be indestructible, so you can swing out with it. This seems terrifying for a 4 mana 4/4. That's a pretty good rate too. Like, think about that. That is powerful. Commanders, you control. Yeah, this is powerful. Like, if you had a legendary creature that was Voltroned up, or just a Chroma that gets pumped by its own nonsense. Like, think about it. A Chroma gets 1, 2, 3, 4, gets +5/+5 on attack based on its own own wording and triggers. So it's like an 11/11 before it even gets started, I think, if I read it right. So like that's like a big creature. And now it's indestructible. Like, if you give it anything else, you're probably knocking somebody out in the game with 300 damage in a hurry. Right?
It definitely seems like it.
Yeah, and like this, and Anara is like, it's just a really strong rate. Like, this feels very powerful. I mean, you don't want, it's obviously, it's a partner with something that wants to swing it. So if you're going to have like the Dirtle commander to go with it, like, no. But if you're going to find a commander that's going to want to swing, and this is the perfect partner to swing, to put together and let you just go ham. So, yikes. Yeesh. All right, we have Alharu, Solemn Ritualist. Read it for us, Lux. What we got here? What are we looking at?
For 4 and a white, you get a legendary creature, human monk, 3/3. When Alharu, Solemn Ritualist, it enters the battlefield, put a +1/+1 counter on each of up to two other target creatures. Whenever a non-token creature you control with a 1/+1/+1 counter on it dies, create a 1/1 white spirit creature token with flying.
I like this one. I like this commander. Because, again, we talked about it earlier in the show. How do +1/+1 counter decks lose? Well, they get board wiped, right? That's the obvious way. And this gives you some measure of protection from that board wipe so that it comes into play. You stick 2+1/+1 counters on each of on two other creatures. And then when somebody wipes the table away, you have at least two spirits that you can then put counters on or make them pick up swords or something. So you have some measure of protection from getting blown out by, you know, a Supreme Verdict or a Crux of Fate or a Damnation or something. So I really like it. And the wider you go with +1/+1 counters, like, as people have described before, there's the option of going tall or going wide, and this rewards you for going wide. So your opponent wipes the board, and now you you have, let's say, call it 4 or 5 creatures on the battlefield with +1/+1 counters. Now you're talking about a situation where you get 5 1/1s to start, and there's lots of ways to pump them up, whether you're playing Dictate of Heliod, or you're giving them swords, or you have ways to put other counters on them. Like, you're talking about really having, like, immediately having an air force that's going to make you be someone to reckon with. And they're going to compel somebody to wipe again, which is going to be, like, you're kind of okay with that because they're going to blow all their mass removal on things. And you have, you know, you're presumably going to have more good targets in your deck to put more counters on. So I'm a big fan. The only piece that's a drawback to me is the 5 mana. That's the only piece that's a drawback. That's a lot of mana in white. Any thoughts there, Lux, on Alharu? Because you and I both are pretty keen on the +1/+1 counter synergy. So, like, what do you think? What is your take on Alharu?
And honestly, I wouldn't run her by herself. I'd probably have her partnered up with someone that take care of that cost.
Oh yeah, like, no, you're not running Alharu as a mono white commander. I don't think that's where Alharu is best suited, but I think Alharu goes in the 99 quite nicely in something. So, or sorry, goes in the not in the 99, but as a partner with them. So, I do like Alharu. I think Alharu is quietly unappreciated or underappreciated and is something that people might want to sit up and take notice of on the go forward if you're into +1/+1 counter strategies. All right. Next, we have Arshal Ghost Lagoon Mystic. So for one black, green, blue, legendary creature, Turtle Shaman, is a 2/4. And as long as Arshalos Lagoon Mystic is tapped, other permanents enter the battlefield tapped. As long as Arshalos is untapped, other permanents enter the battlefield untapped. So, what do you think of this, Lux? This is kind of a neat ability. Is it good?
And I think it could be good because, it's a really good way to mess around with your opponents. You know, they want to bring something to battlefield, but want to make sure it's in a not tapped. They can land that they want to use, or like a creature that has
I think the card is actually quite strong in the sense that you can manipulate the tapped and the untapped part so that you aren't penalized for it, and now you've negated strategies that rely on a lot of haste coming out of the and you tax them in a series of colors that don't usually tax, right? So I think it's interesting. I don't know. I'm not quite as sure how the build would go. It's kind of, again, like Amarath, where I think the build's a little more interesting, but I think it's a really interesting card and has a very interesting taxation effect of having things or your opponent's control come into play tapped. So you're obviously probably looking to run this with things like vehicles or with other artifacts that allow you to tap things or untap things. Maybe you're looking for convoke cards that allow you to, take advantage of the ability to use it to help pay for things. So there's a lot of ways to take Arkalos, and I think he's pretty interesting from a mechanical standpoint. All right, moving on. We get Arden, Intrepid Archaeologist. Want to read it?
Yeah, let me pull up. Okay. For in two and a white, you allegedly creature of course scout known a 2/2 at the
Lux, did you robot on me? You think you roboted on me?
Okay.
I think you roboted on me there.
Try that again. For okay. Then am I still roboting?
Yeah, you're still roboting. I'm not sure why.
Okay, I don't think it's Discord. I think it's my computer.
Okay, all right. So, what's the best play here?
Hear me now.
Yes.
Okay, for two and a white, you allegedly creature, of course, scout 2/2. At the beginning of combat on your turn. You may attach any number of player.
You may attach or the equipment you control to target permanent or player. that's got partner. That's interesting. You can like jump equipment around and jump auras around from creature to creature to put it on something, which is interesting. Like, obviously the idea is being you play a lot of equipment and auras and slap it on Arden and then go to town. But I feel like that's a surefire way to get Arden blown out and killed. So, I don't know. Like, it's interesting, but I'm not excited for it. So, yeah. It's like very, it's a very white ability, isn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Very, very white. Very white and Borosy, like the equipment sort of thing. Anyway, not excited. All right. Armix Filigree Thrasher. This is more interesting. So, 2 and a black, legendary artifact creature Golem for 3/2. Whenever Armix Filigree Thrasher attacks, you may discard a card. When you do, target creature defending player controls gets minus X until end of turn, where X is the number of artifacts you control, plus the number of artifact cards in your graveyard. And it has partner. This is cool because you get a removal spell on a stick. So, this is the this is the sort of deck that wants to play either mill a whole lot of artifacts into your graveyard, or you're looking to build like a collection of inexpensive artifacts like clues or food tokens or something that now count towards your artifact count that you can then use these cards as this is a removal spell for just about everything on the battlefield. So I like it. Again, this is as partner. You're probably not running this as the lead singer, but or by itself as a lead singer, but playing it as a you know partner, it seems perfectly viable and very reasonable. So, any thoughts on Armix there, Lux?
Yeah, not really.
Yeah, I think it's interesting. Again, I like how it's removal on your commander. So you've got it right there. All right, this one is cool. Averna the Chaos Bloom. Do you want to read it, or do you want me to just go through it since your audio has been a bit of an issue?
You might have to do it.
Okay, I'll do it.
I'm gonna try to see if I can get my. Gotcha. And right. I might have to
disappear here. All right, I got you. All right. Averna the Chaos Bloom. So green, blue, red, legendary creature, elemental shaman for 4/2. It's a 4/2. And as you cascade, you may put a land card from among the exile cards onto the battlefield tapped. So, so do this after the last card is exiled, but before deciding whether to cast a non-land card. So, one of the problems with cascading is when you cascade, you don't always get like you exile a bunch of land cards, and you don't necessarily get to ramp them. Now you're going to get two cards off any cascade you get, so you get to pull one like the land card, and you can potentially hit a spell that you're going to elect to cast. So I like it. It's kind of like a free 2-for-1 every time you cascade. And the land comes onto the battlefield tapped. So then, if you then do things that have like landfall triggers, you can do some cool stuff, which makes the Apex Devastator with this guy like super cool. Because Apex Devastator quad cascades, and so as you cascade, so for every instance that you cascade, you get to go find a land, and you get to go and you essentially get to cast a card from your deck for free. So, you know, you're hitting 4 lands, probably 4 spells, going 8, getting 8 things, which, you know, when you think Apex Devastator is 10 mana, okay, now you're going to get 8 things or 8 additional cards out of your deck and cast them or put them onto the battlefield for you. And those landfall triggers with things like, I heaven forbid you find an Omnath, like you're running an Omnath, or you're running Lotus Cobra, or one of the other many other payoffs for having a lot of landfall triggers. I think you're not going to be sad to have Averna in your deck. So, yeah. Lux, did you have any thoughts, or are you just going to listen from here on out?
And honestly, and I think it's in a somewhat cool. And honestly, and I think I might use it in Illuna.
Oh, that's a cool thought. Yeah, that's cool for sure. No, Illuna's an interesting spot. Although I don't know if, because I think Averna technically refers directly to the cascade mechanic, and Illuna is not a cascade. It's exiling, but it's anyway. But I still get your point. It's a very cool card, but you do need to make a point of skewing your deck towards having a certain number of cascade cards in it in order to make it be viable. So very cool card. All right, so tonight's deck is going to be one of our commanders tonight, actually. I wanted to build an Alharu Solemn Ritualist deck. So we talked about Alharu. Alharu being the 5-mana 3/3. You put 2++ counters on two other creatures you control, and when a non-token creature dies, you get, if it has a +1/+1 counter, you get a 1/1 flying spirit. So I partnered Alharu with Numa, Jiraga Chieftain, that says, at the beginning of combat on your turn, you may pay XX. When you do, distribute +1/+1 counters along among any number of target elves. So obviously you're going to want to play a lot of elves. So some of the cards in here are elves. Some of them are not. But you've got a number of elves that are in there to try and draw additional targets for this. So you get things like Gyre Sage. You have things like Evolution Sage. But you've also got lots of other ways to put lots of counters all over stuff. So the green-white gives you access to quite a number of additional +1/+1 counter synergies. So you get, you know, things like Ajani the Great-Hearted, Bazviket, Zhang Yanggu. Then you have a whole bunch of payoff cards that reward you for having +1/+1 counters on things, like Abzan Battle Priest, Abzan Falconer, Einak Bondkin, Bazvi's Lieutenant rewards you for it. What else did there? Oh yeah, Enduring Scale Lord rewards you for it. And Gnarled Colony is another one that gives things that have +1/+1 counters trample. So these are cards that you need to have on the battlefield if you're going to be able to make profitable attacks. Battle Priest gives you lifelink. Falconer gives you things flying and is the obvious choice for the best one in the bunch. Einak Bondkin gives them gives them first strike. Bazri's Lieutenant gives you some sort of protection that if something dies, you're going to get a knight token back. Scale Lord puts extra counters on it. Gnarled Colony gives them trample. Hamza helps reduce the casting cost of things. And then you've got a whole bunch of things that are just going to be goofy things. So you get Rishkar, you get Reclamation Sage, you get Auron Reef Ooze, which is going to be an easy way to pump a lot of tokens onto stuff. Tuskguard Captain gives you things trample, Voracious Hydra, and on and on and on it goes. The ramp package in this here is pretty simple. So you get Celestia Cluestone, Key Rune, and Locket. You're also going to get something like, where is it? Pilgrim's Eye. Rishkar's Puma Renegade gets you some ramp in the sense that you're anything with a +1/+1 counter can now tap to add green. What else is happening here? You get Vastwood Surge, which is an interesting one to go and pump your team if you can kick it. So it's quite interesting, reasonably affordable, set of cards that can do some interesting things. The pieces like that you need to your deck doesn't fall apart are some of the protection spells that you've got in the instance. So Unbreakable Formation, Rootborn Defenses, and then it is Inspiring Call, Heroic Intervention, and Make a Stand all do some impersonation of giving your things indestructible, which is exactly what you want so you don't get wrecked by your opponents. So this is like particularly interesting to help your deck survive being wiped. All right. And then you get some enchantments, like things like Citadel Siege and Felidar Retreat that put extra counters on things. Hardened Scales. You're playing Hardened Scales and Conclave Mentor because they are automatically includes in this deck. You get Garrick's Uprising, which is a new option for allowing you to draw some cards. And then 35 land, which is not a ton, but you know, you're not playing too many 6-mana spells. You're playing, you know, I think a couple, but not too many. So I think 35 is probably where you want to be. So, Flux, pardon me, folks, it's getting late. Any comments there?
And honestly, this is another one of those decks that I'm going to try to build in the future.
Yeah, I know for sure. And I think the best part of this here is that the price tag is really quite affordable. It's $81. An $80 deck, and you get something you can sit down at the table and you can sling cards and you can really go to work. And I mean, are you going to win every game? Not a chance. But you get it, you're in the door, you're at the table, you're playing, and you're probably having fun. So I think this is a sort of a very sweet entry point. It's not expensive, there's not a lot of chase mythics. I think the only card in here that I would qualify as a chase card would be the Ozolith, because the Ozolith is ridiculous. And then Hardened Scales, because Hardened Scales is kind of a key feature to making this deck go. But everything else in here is really affordable. A lot of it is really new. Like, there's a lot of cards that are in this list that are printed in the last, you know, call it, you know, year, that you could tap into, so they're readily available without breaking the bank. So I think the thing is excellent entry point. If somebody's looking to get into the game and play with their friends without, you know, going too crazy, it's $80. It's reasonably straightforward to play. Like, you know what you want to do. You want to make things big, you want to turn them sideways, and you want to smash your opponent to smithereens. So anyway, that's the deck. The show notes are, the list is going to be in the show notes. You can also find the deck over on moxfield.com. Please look for the username, the Epic Experiment Podcast, all one word, and don't be disappointed. All right, Lux, should we wrap this one up tonight?
Yep.
All right, let's bring it home. All right, so that's going to bring this week's show to a wrap. As always, if you want to leave us some feedback, you want to leave us some feedback about your art, the land cards you want to put in your deck, maybe you wanted some advice for the deck we shared with you guys. Are there any other cards that we thought you think should be included? You know, whatever it is you want to please let us know. We'd love to hear what you guys think. So you can email us at theepicexperimentpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us hit us on Twitter, and that's probably the best way to hit us up. Our handle is at epicexpcast. Both of those are going to be in the show notes for you to find out and hit us there. If you want to see all of our decks, and let's be honest, folks, the number of decks is growing and growing rapidly. So check them out. They're on moxfield.com under the username The Epic Experiment Podcast. There's lots there, lots of things to see, lots of budget decks to give you inspiration. So please, 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 you know, come and have a look. We're going to ask you guys, please, 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 you know, listen to us each week. That's fantastic. But please, if you can leave a comment on whatever platform you are on, whether leave a like, a follow, a subscribe, follow us on Twitter, whatever. Every little bit helps, particularly if you'd like to talk Commander each and every week with us. Please, any help to get the word out there is appreciated for sure. You can find our show each and every week right here on the lowestcouncil.com. But we're also on platforms. We're on wherever you hear better platforms like Podbean, iTunes, Google Play. We're on Spotify. We're on Amazon. And we've just started including YouTube. So if you like to catch your podcast a la YouTube, well, you can hear us there. Now, there's no a lot of moving pictures. We're still an audio-only podcast. The day may come where we can do the video to boot. But right now, we are strictly an audio site. So you can listen to us and enjoy our cute little light bulb. And I'm working on the logo. So look for that coming up soon. We've got our 31 days of entry, 31 days of Christmas entry forms in the show notes too. So lots to hear and see. Next week, we're going to do some more talking about Command Legends. We might speculate about what we're going to find in Kaldheim. Maybe we revisit Dominaria because we're not done that. There's lots to do, lots on the docket. But that's for next week. So, on behalf of the Epic Experiment Podcast, we are signing off, wishing you all the best wherever you get your next piece of magic. Thanks very much, everybody. Take care. Have yourself a great week. We'll see you next time.